You're listening to CIOI, The Hawk 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario.
You're listening to a show called Dangerfield on 101.5 The Hawk FM out of Hamilton, Ontario. I'm Mary, and my guest tonight is Chet Doxis. Born and raised in Montreal, Chet is currently based out of New York City, where he has been living since 2014. He's known for several ensemble bands, including his project Rich in Symbols, and groups such as Riverside and Landline. In October of 2020, he released his debut album by the Doxis Brothers band called The Circle with his brother and drummer, Jim. Chet is a Juno nominee for multiple albums and has appeared on over 100 recordings. Praised by the New York Times for his soulful and rhythmically assertive style on tenor saxophone and a warm, whimsy tone on clarinet, he has released 10 albums as a leader and co-leader and has worked with a wide range of artists, including Carla Bley, John Abercrombie, Rufus Wainwright, Maria Schneider, Oliver Jones, and Sam Roberts Band. So welcome to the show, Chet.
Thank you, Mary. I'm so happy to be here talking to you.
Oh my God, I'm so happy to talk to you. It's been way, way too long.
Yeah.
So let's start off the show with a song called Joan Song. And it's off your recently released album called The Circle by the Doxis Brothers, which includes yourself and your brother, Jim. And let's play that song, and then we'll come back and we'll chat a little bit, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Joan's song off the album The Circle. Tonight, my guest is Chet Doxis. So, Chet, that was a beautiful song. And so, you recently just put out this album. And so, it's called The Circle. You recorded it with your brother. And there's a lot to kind of dive into here. So one quote that I read about the title of the album itself, it said, the title and the album art represent our family's relationship to music and to one another. The entire album was recorded by our father, George, and also mixed at our family studio in Pointe Claire, Quebec. During these sessions, customary walks around the circle were taken, the crescent on which our house was situated. So Chet, I guess that's just, my first question is, so I guess you come from a musical family, and yet this sounds like this is the debut album with you and your brother creating together under the name The Doxis Brothers, but you've played music together for a while. What kind of brought you to record this album under that moniker? And can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I wish there was a more exciting story, but it's just that we've both been so busy for, I don't know, the last 10 years. My brother's 3 years older, so he was the first, my dad's a professional musician, as you were mentioning, and my brother, being 3 years ahead of me, started performing professionally when we were, in our late teens. He would be playing downtown in Montreal. There was this great bar called the Jailhouse Rock Cafe, and that was a place where you could get a gig when you were coming up, and you could actually leave the suburbs and go play downtown. So my brother was kind of the first one to leave the nest, as it were, to go play downtown. And he was kind of always ahead of me. So I felt like, definitely following in his footsteps. And then we started working together, and we worked together a lot in Montreal and caught the tail end of like really the old days of Montreal. I remember playing old time big band dances when I was 15 at these old yacht clubs with all these beautifully dressed old people knowing all the dances, playing like Count Basie's music, Duke Ellington's music, getting a drive home from my first professional gig by myself without my dad when I was like 15. And the guy who drove me home, this is great. The guy who drove me home, handed me, as we were getting in his car and he was driving me home and he picked me up for my parents, like such a gentleman, handed me a red Solo cup over the top of the car as I was getting in the passenger seat. And he said, this is just something I like to drink. I like to unwind after the gig. And it was, Mary, I kid you not, it was a full red Solo cup of single malt scotch. Yeah. And we hit the road home. So, anyways, it's a really circuitous way of answering your question that we were just so scattered professionally, working together sometimes and then working all over the place, and people, you guys should have a band together. And finally we got to college and we held down a regular night on the Plateau at a in Montreal, which is a neighborhood in Montreal. People are probably familiar with the Plateau. And one night a week, this restaurant bar had music, and that was like our college hangout. We made it our college hangout that kind of rallied around this trio that we had with my brother and a bass player named Zach Lober, with whom I still play almost in every project. And then everyone kind of got busy, and by everyone, I mostly met my brother, who's like an amazing musician. And he's one of those musicians that I've seen it happen where he'll be playing, and as soon as we're done playing, all the other musicians or new people kind of like flock towards him. And he just kind of like bounces around from cool project to cool project. So he's been mainly the busy one in Canada. And so we finally thought, well, a year ago, like, this is kind of crazy. We should really make some records together. And we started, and as soon as we finished the last day of recording, we were on the phone together talking about the next one. Like, we can't believe we haven't done this. Yeah. So we're already talking about what the next one's going to be. And just like, oh my God, we have some serious lost time to make up here.
Yeah. And so your dad was a musician and you had a studio in your house. So what kind of music did your dad, was he like a jazz musician or what kind of music did he play?
Yeah, he came up in the 70s in Montreal, like the 60s and 70s, where there were just so many live venues. So he's primarily a classically trained guitarist. So his foundation is like orchestral guitar, which is very niche. But because he played the guitar, of course, and at that level, he could play in a lot of different situations, and he loved all music, especially like music from the 60s and 70s. So the records we grew up with were like, he was really into Earth, Wind and Fire, but then there would be like Paul Simon records, like just get, like go down the list of all the amazing music, which of any person that in my life that could probably make an extensive list, it's you probably right now off the top of your head, but like you just go down the incredible music of the 70s, and that was mostly what was in our house. So he played like a lot of clubs. He had kind of given it up by the time we were kids, and when we were kids he was directing choirs. He loves choral music and classical music and early music, meaning, you know, like music from the Middle Ages and Baroque music, and then right up to more contemporary choral works. And then he also started teaching. And by the time we were in, I guess by the time my brother was little, he had already had a band program at the high school that we went to. And fast forward, I actually had my dad for 5 years in a row for homeroom.
No way.
And he was my band teacher, and the school was 1,400 kids, and there were 1,200 kids in the music program. So it was this amazing music program that they built up in the town that I grew up in. It's called Pointe Claire, and it was like, you know, pretty amazing experience. And he's, I hope you guys get to meet one day. You guys will definitely hit it off. He's a great personality. Yeah.
That's incredible. And so there was a studio in your home. And so was that room like a revered room? Were you allowed in it? Were you allowed to mess around with the recording instruments? Or was it kind of like you had to be in there when dad was in there? Or what was that like?
It was very inclusive. Like, to give you an idea, there was one day where my dad had always, you know, tinkered with four-track recorders and early, you know, home recording equipment. And then it seemed like it went from 0 to 100, where the next week he knocked out the whole side of, like, had all the plans approved, knocked out the whole side of the house, built an extension on the house, and had this amazing recording studio built. And we were like, I remember being little and being able to help out, and we were very included. And my brother was the one who really kind of took the initiative to learn how to record and had local bands in. And I looked on your Instagram today, and you interviewed Peter Elkis. Was he one of your guests? Okay. So I might be getting confused with my West Island trivia here, and Sam.
He's from Pointe Claire.
Yes. Okay. So then Jimmy, we grew up in Pointe Claire. Mm-hmm. So then there's some connection. There was a band called the Local Rabbits. Does that ring a bell?
Yes.
Was that Peter's band?
That was his band when he was like 15. It was him, Ben Gunning, and who was the other guy? And they were, yeah, they were in the local Rabbits. They started when they were in high school.
Okay. There might be a little bit of like local Rabbits in our studio at some point. In the early days, my brother had a band that was part of with this a great musician who unfortunately passed away very young named Mark Jelena. And they had a band called Stone Buffalo. And I think they played Clyde's. Does Clyde's mean anything to you, that name? It was like, it was a rock and roll bar in the West Island down by the water. And that's where like we could all get gigs with our bands.
So you started playing the clarinet when you were like 9 and then picked up the sax like a couple years later, correct?
Yeah. But we were both playing drums. We started music lessons really young, like to take it back. Like a lot of people start their kids really young on Suzuki piano violin. So we did all that. And then kind of like petered out maybe around 8 or 9 or 10 years old. And then got interested in playing woodwinds. But my dad actually signed us up for private drum lessons with this great teacher that would come to the house every week. And it was clear that Jimmy was definitely the drummer. I mean, like so talented, so quick with drumming. And I just love to play drums. So I kept playing drums through high school. And then I was in some bands in high school, like, you know, high school rock bands. And yeah, it was pretty awesome because I was telling my daughter, I have 2 daughters and one of them's 13. I was explaining like when I was in grade 7. So high school in Quebec is grade 7 to 11. I remember being in grade 7, playing enough drums to get like kind of pulled aside by like 3 guys in grade 10 and 11 to join their rock band.
Wow.
And it was like the coolest thing ever because I guess there was no one else that could play drums in the whole school. And I wasn't good. It's not like you got the gig because you're like, I think I just, maybe I had a drum set at my house so we could jam there. But all that to say that it was, yeah, nice to be able to keep in touch with the power of being in a band, like, you know, coming through high school, being in a rock band.
That's so cool. And so your daughter, you've got 2 daughters. So one's 13. And what's the age of your other daughter?
11.
11. And so are you playing music with them now?
Mm-hmm. They play violin, and the oldest one is definitely showing more of an interest, but they do their violin. They're pretty diligent. At this point, it's still maybe slightly a bit forced, but it seems like, it seems like the eldest is kind of taking to it and is into it. And Clara just kind of like dutifully abides and does her practicing.
You actually had a great post on your Instagram once, and it was like you were at like a roller derby or something with your kids, and you were making music charts as you read.
Right.
I had a question about that because it looked like they were. Is this a thing doing digital charts for music? Is that like it looked like. Is that a thing?
Mm-hmm. So there are like plenty of software programs that help you write music. So that's kind of like expected in any kind of instrumental music now is to make printed music. And so there's plenty of software that can now help make really clean charts. And I would do a little bit of that when I was in SAM, the SRB. Like I would sometimes there'd be like bigger televised events where we'd expand the horn section, or maybe we would have other musicians joining us. So sometimes we needed some printed music. So in certain scenarios with the guys, I would have to provide some printed music too. So it comes in handy, like in all different situations. Yeah.
For those just joining, you're listening to 101.5 FM The Hawk, and tonight I'm joined by Chet Doxis. And so Chet, that kind of leads very well into the next topic I want to talk about. So you just spoke about playing with the Sam Roberts Band and making charts, and that's kind of a perfect segue into talking about the album that you made called Rich in Symbols, which was produced by Liam O'Neill, known for, you know, such bands as Metric, Broken Social Scene, The Stills, Kings of Leon. And I believe Dave Nugent from SRB also played on that album, or Sam Roberts Band. And I think, so Liam would have been one of those horn players as well, because I think he played on some shows. And who was there? And it was, what's his name from Brooklyn?
Matt Bowder.
Yeah.
Great, so you
did an album called Rich in Symbols, and this is like, this is just like a dream project to talk about, because it's, you would go to an art museum and you would sketch actually the music that you felt when you looked at a piece of art. So such artists, famous artists as, you know, Basquiat, Robert Mapplethorpe, Keith Haring. So how did you come up with this idea, and how did you pick the paintings that you wrote about?
There's kind of a good Sam Roberts Band connection here, in that occasionally when we'd be on the road, and it usually happened after we'd be on the road for a while on the bus, you, as you can imagine, get a little antsy on your days off, and often the activity would be to, I remember trying to find a museum or something stimulating, especially in the winter when you can't do anything. So I remember specifically being in Buffalo, which is someplace where the guys played a lot. And always this amazing hospitality too. People like always took such great care of us in Buffalo. But there's this I'm going to say it more positively. There's an unusually impressive museum in Buffalo called the Albright Knox, mm-hmm. and you just wouldn't expect to see it in outside of a major city. And it's, if anyone's ever has the opportunity or has been there, they'll know what I'm talking about. Like, it's at a world-class museum in Buffalo, which is amazing. So we were walking around on a day off, and we got a little bit of special treatment in that one of the curators, I think, greeted us and gave us a tour and kind of educated us along the way. But if you go to that collection, there's an incredible modern collection, as well as a lot of classical works and everything in between. So anyways, we were walking around, and I just happened to bring a sketchbook with me that day, because I've been thinking about trying this out. And sure enough, we were walking around the museum, and I just sat in front of a painting maybe for a little longer than usual, which, as I found out, the average is about 8 seconds in front of a piece of art. Yes, isn't that depressing?
Yeah.
I gave it a little more time that day. And mm-hmm. almost started meditating basically on a work and letting it, it's hard to put words to these things, but just responding. I think that's what you said, and I think that's a good word for it. Like responding.
Was there a consistent mm-hmm. process that you followed for each, or did they each kind of speak to you in different ways?
I've got a little bit of opportunity to play with paintings. The Montreal Museum last year was really generous with their space, and we did a little bit of like an interview in part of the museum, but then I got to play while looking at some paintings. And it's something that I'd love to share with people one day. Like, if there was ever opportunity to kind of do like a little roaming concert from painting to painting and just improvise in front of these paintings for people. And then we kind of travel on to the next one. I think that could be a really cool way to experience paintings, not just for me, but for other musicians to also try with other people, with people there too. Like, just see what kind of paintings pull out of musicians. Cause I think a good number of people, like musicians, do have these pretty immediate responses to the energy coming out of some of these works. I'd be really interested to see what, to know what some people see when they hear certain songs, because there's so much pictorial music, and that's so subjective, you know. One track could score any type of scene from a movie, you know, and that would be okay. There's no wrong answer, which I think is fascinating. So I think that there's a lot of area to explore here, and I hope it's a place that more musicians.
Yeah.
Or like maybe museums. Like, I've been kind of slowly trying to hammer away at museums, trying to like you're doing, like illuminate this idea where I think there's something to be explored here for people to enjoy and for musicians to like stick stick Dan Lanois in front of a painting. I guarantee you something cool is gonna happen.
Right.
So the last one we did, we played some concerts at the Montreal Museum and then the Quebec City Museum. And this was music for Canadian paintings now. So this is for the Group of Seven, Tom Thompson and Emily Carr. And so we did a concert and then we recorded after, but we projected these paintings behind the band while we played the corresponding.
Is it behind the band or is it through the band?
Well, it's behind the band, but that kind of leads to some other ideas about like, I'm trying to think of like new ways to maybe like project it onto the band, but yeah. There are a lot of rules as I'm learning about
like
painting.
Kind of like copyright kind of things?
Oh yeah, a lot of family stuff behind each painting. Like when you ask to project a painting, you need to get the permission of family. Some of these estates are not like.
Is there like a kind of like how with music, how there's that, what is it, the 100-year rule or whatever for lyrics and stuff? Does that apply to visual art as well?
Some of the paintings are in public domain, what they call a song. And so I'm not exactly sure how it works, but I can tell you that I did learn quickly about what goes behind certain paintings and all of the money and the politics behind something that we see.
So for those just joining, I'm talking with Chet Doxis tonight on 101.5 FM The Hawk. The show's called Dangerfield and it's out of Hamilton, Ontario. So Chet, we've just talked a lot about your album, Rich in Symbols. So let's play, what song would you like to play off that? Let's have you pick. And if you could pick the song and then let me know what the painting associated with it. What's the Basquiat one? I'm actually curious.
Oh, yeah, that's called Why You Were Sleeping, and I'm so happy you mentioned that because I wanted to choose one with Dave Nugent on it. So that's a good one for me. He's playing his heart out on it.
Awesome. Well, let's listen to While You Were Sleeping and with Chet Doxis, and it's off his album called Rich in Symbols.
Thank you.
That was While You Were Sleeping on 101.5 FM The Hawk. I'm joined tonight with Chet Doxis. So Chet, you're living in New York right now, and I think you just recently did a project with incredible American jazz composer, pianist, organist, band leader, Carla Bley. So she was a super important figure in the free jazz movement of the 60s. And she's a legend. So were you just working on a project with her recently?
Well, it started, yes, we've been working recently. Our association kind of goes back a few years. I'm part of this band called Riverside with Dave Douglas and Steve Swallow, who is Carla's partner, longtime partner now, and my brother Jim on drums. And we had been starting to interpret some of Carla's music. Carla is most known as a composer, and for decades now being definitely at the vanguard of, creative composition. She's 84 now. And she's playing amazingly, and she's an incredible person to be around. She's 84 going on 14. Really a special person. So we wanted to try to start playing with her. We needed a pianist, and we just were bold enough to ask if she'd join our band. And at first we kind of had to talk her into it, because like a lot of composers, they're not very confident instrumentalists. They see themselves as composers first, but some of them use an instrument as a tool to write. Carla would, I think, admittedly fit this, but she shouldn't, because she's a brilliant pianist. So it was like, she finally agreed to join our band. And not only did she agree to, but she had been writing for us without us knowing. So she brought this incredible suite of music to the band, and we were actually supposed to be recording a record at the end of October, November at a club down here called the Jazz Standard for 4 nights. And we're going to do a live record, and we're psyched about it. But of course, because of the pandemic, that had to get canceled. So, and I've stayed in touch with her and always just tried to be around her. So one of the other ways that I've been around her is through a band called the Liberation Music Orchestra, which was Charlie Hayden's band. And she was the conductor of that band, and she has kept that band going, and we've been playing concerts, maybe a few concerts a year, and I'll play on and off with them. I'm not the regular saxophone player, but I'll gladly fill in when I'm asked. And the most recent thing we've been doing is a solo collaboration. So at the beginning of the pandemic, it's coincidental. I thought that I would reach out to a composer to write solo repertoire for me. And I'd been playing solo shows in New York, improvised solo shows in New York. So these solo shows have been really like soul searching and eye opening. And there's an amazing record shop in the Lower East Side called the Downtown Music Gallery that specializes in, post-punk, everything like post-punk, like what I guess we could call no wave music, right up to contemporary improvised music right now. So you can play there too. It's amazing. He pushes the records to the side, and it tends to lean more towards improvised music. So I've been able to play solo shows there. And I thought, okay, well, now that I've done that and I want to continue to do that, I think this might be a cool opportunity to work with a composer. So I reached out to Carla to see if she'd be interested in writing solo pieces for me. And that would be like an hour long concert. And sure enough, she agreed, but she'd also, again, been secretly rewriting music for me. So this was, she was just finishing a piece that could be played solo. So we're kind of entering this new project together where she's writing music for me. And I'm going to, perform it and hopefully film each piece, which makes it kind of what makes it kind of unique besides her compositional voice is that she has some stage direction and costumes and some dialogue. So if you go back into some of her earlier work, you'll see that she doesn't shy away from some staging of some of the pieces. So hopefully eventually when I perform the music, a lot of that stuff will be incorporated. And if you watch the film that we just did a couple months ago, you'll see that I'm kind of there's some stage direction where there's some acting involved, or like a lot of jokes and costumes, and all of that stuff is written into the score, actually.
And for those just joining, or for our listeners who want to check that out, Chet's Instagram is instagram.com/Chet, C-H-E-T underscore Doxas, D-O-X-A-S. And his website is www.chetdoxas.com. And I think you posted recently one of those videos that you're referencing, correct?
Yeah, I posted it online last week and then on Instagram today. And you're going to look, what I think it's worth highlighting and talking about her is I think it's amazing that you'll see a composer who's late in their career, who's still very active composing. And you get to see where, how far someone can take it. Like, to me, it's almost like, what would Georgia O'Keeffe be painting if she were with us longer? What would these great artists that were gone too soon, where would Hendrix have gone, and where would Kurt Cobain be? Like, where would they go? And so when you get the privilege to be around an artist with this much substance and integrity at 84 and having this much fun making music, I think it's so rare. So she's like, yeah, I'm going to write a piece. Guess what? You're getting in a costume. You're going to twirl and you're going to wipe out. And then we're going to pretend that we all hate you. And you're like, yeah, this is incredible. Like, what a privilege to be around someone like this who still loves to play, you know?
How do you take all that in? Like, it's amazing.
Well, I guess the older I get, hopefully the more I'm taking in. And you know, like bringing it back to some of the early stuff, like being in Sam Roberts Band, it was definitely an eye-opening experience as to like the scope of admiration for a band. So yeah. the numbers of people, the deep connection that people feel with the music, and I have to give my hats off to that whole band for being kind of leading by example in that way, where there's not a big head in that band at all. And Sam definitely leads by example with that.
They're just like, they're gentlemen, they're artists, they're hilarious, they're fun. Like, they're just
they're
that you would definitely want to spend a lot of time with. Like, they're just, they're great examples of how to like, yeah, just kind of make art and be good people.
And I think the common denominator between these two things in my life is gratitude. Like, they're coming away from that band, I was like, they're grateful. Those are a bunch of dudes that are grateful and know how to show it. And I think that's something that I would bring into this other part of my life too with Carl. Like, I'm just grateful to be in the same room as these people and watch how they carry themselves and watch how they relate with music. You know, maybe to get a little like esoteric about it, I actually just, you know, was thinking about this with Carla, because we were playing a gig about a year ago and someone looked up in a rehearsal sound check and they said, and it was a piece that she wrote, and someone said, "Hey Carla, is this note supposed to be long or short?" And she said, "How am I supposed to know?" And that just gave me like kind of blew my mind. She's like, oh, music, like even if we make it, it's not ours. Like, you have to be reminded of that sometimes. And I think that's what one of the things that a lot of our favorite bands in common, like, they make sound, but it's not ours. Like, we're finding it, we're chiseling it out of. And I think the people that I've been lucky enough to be around, maybe I'm just blueprinting this on them, but I feel that way. I'm like, oh yeah, if you're around people that are like Bill Frisell, the guitar player, the great guitarist, has been playing in my neighborhood on the front lawn, weather permitting. And yeah, it's been amazing. And you can just walk down and take a drink.
Call me next time, please.
Yeah, oh, please. That would be amazing. There's no one else I'd rather go see. We'd have a great time. But he has this spirit when he plays where I feel like he can't even believe what's coming out. He's like, I know, isn't this amazing? And he's playing with that joy of discovery, like it's not his. And
yeah. Well, and let's I want to talk a little bit more about how you put together the songs on your new album. Because I think for those just joining, you're listening to 101.5 FM The Hawk. I'm talking to Chet Doxis, and he just released end of October a new album with his brother. And it's called The Circle, and it's by the Doxis brothers. But can you maybe like take us through kind of just like how you selected or how you composed each song? Like, were these... did you bring your own songs to the table, and did your brother, did you collaborate? I think there's a cover in there. Like, can you take us through maybe?
Yeah, sure. Well, I guess I do most of the writing because it's just something that I've always done, but I do let my brother guide me because he has really great taste and he's usually right. Hopefully he never hears this show, but so I never have to back that up. But his answer to things sometimes or often when I'll bring him a piece, he'll be like, cool, more open. It's got to be more open. And I think I'm finally getting to understand what that means. We'll have a couple references as we're writing, like maybe... You know, we mentioned Dan Lanois before, or Neil Young comes up a lot, or Lester Young, Billie Holiday. There's a kind of a pool of artists in between my brother and I that we keep circulating as this touchstone for openness and the sound of open space. It makes me think about where we're headed, my brother and I. I mean, it's getting more towards that. Like, and to me, that's almost sounding like where we're from, but there's just kind of this place that I think we're headed, and my brother was kind of leading the charge and was like, it's got to sound, we want it to sound more and more like, how much can you take out? Like a great author, I guess, would be a good example of this. How much can you take out and leave the important parts? And I think that's one of the things that can really resonate with, oh my God, he said so much with so little.
Can I ask you to talk about like the pre-production of the album? And so how did you each bring the music to the table, and how long did that take, and how did you decide on the songs?
Yeah, well, I guess in like the true jazz tradition, we love to play and work things out in front of people. So we organized a series of live concerts, mostly in Montreal, where we would play three nights in a row at a club, two nights here, two nights there, and just like keep piling on the music. And when you work with musicians of a certain level, you can show them a piece of music, probably, you know, while you're eating dinner before the gig, have a couple of, you know, questions, talk-throughs, and then play it the next set. And so we can just use the bandstand as a laboratory that way to see what works. And we basically did that. I mean, we had too much music to record thanks to the gigs and the things that I was writing. And so we would just use the clubs to work through those music and get to play like three sets a night sometimes, which is awesome. And you get to, yeah.
And Chet, how do you name your songs?
Well, it's a combination of a whole bunch of things. I have a list on my phone called Back From One Late Night at the Normandy Hotel in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I don't expect you to know it, but you'll recognize the title because the list is called With Jimmy Hall. and then under that name are about 150 song titles. And that was... started with Nuge and Jimmy in the Normandy Hotel one night. So that's one of my places I go for song titles.
Oh my God, amazing. That's awesome. Off of Rich and Symbols, can you talk a little bit about who were the seven artists that you were inspired by for, what were the seven artists that you were inspired by for that?
Yeah. Yeah, to maybe frame it a little bit, I found like we talked a little bit about writing for paintings and how that came to be. And the first time I remember doing it, I remember having tons of ideas in the museum, and you know, after a couple of hours or a few hours in the museum, realizing I had snippets of songs from that written for like art posters from Paris, Georgia O'Keeffe painting, a huge Chagall mural. Like, it was all over the map. I thought, oh, this would be cool to like share this with people, but this would be a total spazzed out night if you had like all of these different artists showed it one night. It would just be make no sense. So I thought, okay, I wonder if there's an era that I could pare it down to. And I just started reading Please Kill Me. Are you familiar with that book?
Legs McNeil.
Yes.
He just got married this weekend. I followed him.
Saw that. Yeah. He looks amazing.
Yeah. I know. Like, I've actually followed him for a while on Instagram, and he just posts the coolest stuff, eh?
Oh, yeah.
That book is awesome. Yeah.
Oh, I know. So that book, you know, enhanced my, or just like reinforced my love for that time in New York where it was still affordable for all these people to be on top of each other. And the painters go to musicians that go to the concerts, and the musicians go to the openings, and then these little lofts and places where they could actually put on nights together where sometimes no one came, and that was cool because they were experimenting, and it was all about experimenting and how amazing. And I thought that was just like a beautiful thing to try to learn more about and immerse myself in. So I honed in on this period, I guess, which would have been late 70s into the mid 80s. And so I tried to make sure that I could visit the works that I was writing for. And I've tried to look at paintings or photos online, and it just doesn't work. I have to be in the same room as the works for it to work, unfortunately. So, or fortunately, I'm happy to be there, but I was like, oh, this worked out while looking at the computer. This would be great, but it just doesn't. So the artists are, Robert Mapplethorpe, Keith Haring, Basquiat, Nan Golden, who is a little, I don't know if she's lesser known, but out of all the names that I'm naming, she's, a little less known, still active as far as I know, and very beautiful pictures. So she's a photographer. Another photographer named Robert Longo, and I'm wondering if I'm leaving someone out. I did two for Basquiat, and so I think that takes care of all of the artists. Mm-hmm. I like the way that Keith Haring and Basquiat remind me of Miles Davis and some other musicians like Ornette Coleman, in a way where there's almost this, like, they're like those paintings can look like early, like they're drawn by early men. They almost look like cave paintings sometimes.
Great. Yeah.
And I find like the sounds that, Miles Davis or Dewey Redman or even Carla Bley, the way they can distill something down to its essence reminds me of what music may have sounded like at the very beginning of music. And I think I think it's sometimes referred to as primitivism. Thank you. Well, I'm so happy that people are finally finding out about Canada's best kept secret, and that you're like sharing all your knowledge and love of the music. I was telling Fleur, my wife, before I got on, I'm like, of all the people that I could think of that were more qualified to talk to musicians and bring like a genuine enthusiasm and love for the arts, it's you. And I'm just so happy you're doing this. And then your visual art is kind of finding its way too. And it's just, I'm so happy. I'm like, oh, it's really nice when you see the right people in the right places. So.
Well, and it's been such a pleasure to talk to you, Night Chat. Cause like, and I feel like we're going to have like a couple more episodes in us because this has been.
Yeah. I mean, I love talking to you.
But thank you so much for your time, Chat. And I will.
And okay. Send my love to everybody over there.
I will. Great to talk to you.
You're listening to The Hawk 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario.